Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, my name is Danny Roth, and this is Everyday Horror. It's a podcast where we watch at least one horror movie for every day in the month of October, and then we talk about it. I am joined by associate editor at Fangirls and the co-host of the Trends Like These podcast, Courtney Enlow.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for being on this podcast where we talk about the spookums.
I love a good spook-em-up, and I'm very excited to discuss this specific one.
Oh, which one is it?
Oh, my friend. I selected for this week Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell because I love it.
All right, so you love Drag Me to Hell.
I love this movie. I love this movie.
What was your experience with it? Do you remember the first time you saw it?
Yeah, I saw it in the theater, and it felt like such a Sam Raimi movie because it came after the Spider-Man movies that didn't feel very Sam Raimi. Like, they were great. He did a great job with them, but I am like an Evil Dead purist. And so when I saw this movie, it felt like such a good piece to that history rather than Spider-Man, which was great. But this was like really in that Sam Raimi loves a Foley artist. He never met a Foley artist he didn't like. And this movie is just resplendent with squishy sounds.
Yes, it is. So Drag Me to Hell, until Ash vs. Evil Dead came out, was about the closest you were going to get to an Evil Dead 4. It is very similar in tone. It was, in fact, written, I think, somewhere between like 93 and 99, and then sat on the shelf because Sam Raimi was, you know, doing serious motion pictures and then was also doing Spider-Man for a while.
It felt very timeless, too, because in that period, like the mid-2000s, it felt like horror, like kind of the mass market horror movies were trying to be something a little different. And this felt like kind of a throwback in a way. So that makes a lot of sense that it was written in the 90s.
Yeah, I agree. And we can sort of talk about the ways in which it is both timeless and timely as we get a little further into it. But before we do, I guess the gist to know is that, yes, it is a Sam and Ivan Raimi joint. It came out in 2009. It stars Alison Lohman and Justin Long. Those are like your two main actors. Alison Lohman plays Christine Brown and Justin Long plays her boyfriend, Clay Dalton. They are kind of like almost like a Mulder and Scully in a way, where one believes the thing and the other is skeptical. But before we can really talk about the movie proper, it's very important to sort of talk about a content warning. Like, I don't always feel like there's like really important ones, but this is a movie that there is one element that if you do not like this thing, I would say don't watch this movie. And that is that it's racist. It is a very racist movie. Like, I don't know So here is, I will provide the context because it may matter to some people. So it is a film wherein a young woman is cursed by an older woman. And the older woman is of, let us say, a nomadic Eastern European of that Roma origin. I don't even
Romani
know if I'm allowed to.
Descent.
Yeah. So I don't even. So like, here's the thing. Like, the conversation over what words you can and cannot use is a bit dicey. All I know is there's a word that starts with the letter G, and I know I'm not supposed to say that one. So I don't. But they use that word in the film somewhat liberally, I will say. And the reason, there is a reason of why it is that Sam and Ivan Raimi thought that that would be okay, I guess. I'm not sure if in 2009 this was like a huge part of the cultural conversation or to the degree that it has been recently. But also the reason that they wrote this way is because the Raimis are of Hungarian descent. I guess they thought that that would make it okay. They are Hungarian Jews. I am also of Hungarian descent. I would not use the G word, and I would probably not do a thing where an old lady of that background puts a curse on somebody. It's a very classic horror trope, I mm-hmm. suppose, but it's something that I would say nowadays we don't really do. Like, you could just have an old lady put a curse and not mention the origin, not go that route. But yeah, if that is a thing that is going to get you into a lather, and that is completely fair, that's a thing you should probably know about before you decide to see that film. And if it matters to you that the Raimis are in fact of Hungarian descent, if that makes a difference to you at all, there you go. Now you know it. So with that said, I also really like it, and I saw it alone in a theater.
All by yourself?
I did. I don't know how common this is. I am not I'm not a man who goes his own way when it comes to movies.
Mm-hmm.
Or really in that movement in general.
Is this
but
a sad story? Or is this
no, it's not. I just really wanted to see it.
Yeah.
And nobody else was like, I was like, I need to see this right now. Is anybody available? And usually when people say no, I'm like, oh, wait. But no, I had to see this thing. And I went, and it was almost a completely empty theater. And I was just quietly giggling to myself the whole way through.
It's so fun. And I know that we just did this whole content worrying about how it's racist, and that sounds so much worse now. But it really is just such a fun movie, and everyone in it is so just, like, up for it. Everyone in it is having the best time, and it's just delightful.
Yeah. Okay, so would you like to set up what the plot of this film is?
I would love to set up what the plot of this. So Alison Lohman, her character, Christine, she works at a bank. She's up for this promotion, and Christine is trying to change some things about herself. She is from a farm. She has a bit of an accent. She's trying to do, like, elocution tapes to lose said accent. But there's this guy. I believe it is it Kevin? Kevin that's trying to steal the promotion?
Oh, yes. Hold on. His name is Stu.
He seems like a classic Kevin. And then he
does seem like a – why is his name not Kevin? It's not even the actor's
name.
Now,
I don't know where I got Kevin from, but he's just a real Kevin.
We can call him Kevin from now on if you want.
Yeah, and then David Paymer is such a that guy that this was like the – yeah, he's such a that guy.
David Paymer plays Mr. Jax, the boss.
And they have a little bit of a, like, misogynist gang up on the girl – camaraderie between the two of them, and she's just trying to get ahead in this world.
Yeah, she wants the assistant manager's position at the bank. She's worked really hard. The further into the movie we get, the more we realize how much she is doing in the short game, and also that she's been doing a fair amount in the long game, like way more than anybody working at a local branch bank would do.
Right. They're still sending her off for sandwiches, though.
Yeah, because, which is garbage. It's pretty bad. They treat Christine Brown pretty badly, to say the least.
That's classic Kevin. Just classic
Kevin.
Ugh, Kevin, every time. She decides to, like, she really wants to push for this promotion, so she makes the big move. So when an elderly woman comes in, literally begging to keep her house, after they've given her multiple extensions and her boss says it's her call, she makes the tough call and says no to the woman, basically kicking her out of her house. And this woman, who is of, like, older Eastern European, as we referred to earlier, descent, does not handle it well, does not handle being shamed well. And things start getting buck wild.
Yes. So what happens is she places a curse upon Christine Brown, the curse of the Lamia, in which after 3 days of torment, the Lamia will come and, as the title suggests, drag Christine Brown to hell.
And the Lamia is a goat.
Yes, it's a goat. It's a goat demon. I think one of the things that I really like about this movie is that it sets up the stakes very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
In that it doesn't even start with Christine Brown. It doesn't start with the older woman whose name is Mrs. Ganesh. They start with a young child who stole something from a group of people who, once again, they use a term that I will not say, and he gets in trouble. They put a curse on him, and a woman tries to save his soul but fails, and we actually see the kid get dragged down to hell. So we know this is legit.
I forget a lot that this movie – I've seen this movie like probably like 5 or 6 times, and I forget every time that this movie does start with the death of a child, just a child getting pulled into hell by demons.
This movie is deeply sadistic.
It really is.
Because it's like there are things that happen that you're supposed to laugh at and you're like,
I mean, aside from the child death, like I'm down for the rest of it. Like I am very happy about everything else that happens in this movie. It's delightful in that Sam Raimi way.
I'm going to call one thing out, but not yet. You'll know when it arrives. Man. You're going to get busted. Not really. I mean, anyway.
Why would you do this? Why would you bring me on for this call-out culture on this podcast?
You know what? Look, the thing is that Twitter is really, you know.
I thought we were friends.
Twitter's got the hot memes, and I'm just trying to bring those over to the world of podcasts.
Yeah. That gotcha journalism.
Yep, that's it. It's actually, you know, that's that I hate you and myself and everybody, mm-hmm. really. And yeah. that's why I'm doing.
And you
doing,
know what? That's really that's the message why, here today.
That's why I got into podcasting. That's what it's all about. Anyway, all right. So, gosh, I'm trying to think where to go, what the order should be, because there are many layers of goodness.
There's so much, and it's like once you go into one rabbit hole, you kind of stay there. So maybe let's stay broad.
Okay. Well, let's talk about like sort of like the textual, because there's a lot of subtextual mm-hmm. stuff too. So we'll stick with textual. Here is a thing that I really like, Alison Lohman. She's great.
She's so good, and I'm so sad that we have been deprived more Alison Lohman for so long because she is fantastic. She is so. On board for this movie. Like, she really gives it all in a way that, like, you really – I love horror. I love horror movies. She is, like, enjoying herself in a way that I can't even, like, name another person who's, like, living for it in the way that she is in this movie.
And I think the most interesting thing about that is that this was not even her role. She was the shemp. She kind of came in after the fact. It was supposed to be Ellen Page. Ellen Page was going to be the star of this movie, and then she decided to do Whip It, or she was going to do Whip It, mm-hmm. and it was a conflict. So she bailed, and they got Alison Lohman instead. And I have to say, I've heard people say they wish they saw Ellen Page in this. Not me.
No, not me. Alison Lohman has such a perfect, like, after seeing her in this movie so many times, like, she is, like, she's got that Sam Raimi quality. Like, you can see exactly how she took his direction, how she took this script, and she just, like, went with it. And I love it.
Yeah. The other thing to know about Alison Lohman's performance is that she did almost all of her own stunts.
That's tremendous. Also, she looks more like Jessica Lange in this movie than she did when she was playing Jessica Lange.
That's true.
It was, like, distracting. She looks so much like Jessica Lange in this movie. And I think it's because of American Horror Story that now I kind of, like, have them kind of similar in my brain. I've seen them do similar things. So many fluids.
Yeah, I agree. So, like, I think that is, having watched it a number of times, I think that is probably the first thing that I come back to over and over again is just that I feel that her performance in this film is so pitch perfect, and I am aware now, after having researched it pretty extensively, just how intense she was. Like, she really committed in a way that I don't think anybody else on the set ever had, and I don't think most actors that come into horror movies and don't like she's not a big horror movie person. She's not done like a ton of them. People who come in and do it once usually don't. She's the driving force of the whole movie.
And Sam Raimi horror is a very specific kind. It's kind of why we think of like, you know, Bruce and Sam Raimi, like they are together. And so it's kind of hard to like find someone else who gets that. But she does that like very fine line of horror comedy and not pitching too hard in either direction. Like she does it so specifically and it's great.
Yeah. All right. So that is a thing that really, or a person, I guess, that really jumps out at me. What is the thing about this movie that you really love?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that's really it that I love about it. Are we getting into the thing? I don't
know. Do you want to talk about the? No, no. Oh, my gosh. There's a thing. And eventually it'll come up.
I don't know if you're just like generally asking or if this was like a setup.
No, I was asking a general question.
I no longer trust you, Danny Roth.
Oh my gosh, that's nobody really does. So no.
I love that the Lamia's whole game is just to mess with her. Like it's not necessarily like causing like gore and death and destruction. It's just messing with her, and that is something that I feel like makes it feel classic. As opposed to that kind of like aughts era movie where, you know, things were getting really dark there for a while. Because I was looking it up today. In 2009, that's when there were so many horror like remakes and reboots. And they all decided to just like go really dark with it. Like the Halloween remake and the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, not that they were in 2009, but they were around that same time. And they focused so hard on, like, make it devastating. And this just felt fun and light. And, like, this demon is not trying to, like, destroy this woman and dehumanize her. It's kind of just having fun. And in a weird way, that kind of made it almost feminist. Just by not actually, like, brutalizing a woman, it made it kind of feminist.
This is interesting to me because apparently at the time when the movie came out, people felt that it was deeply misogynistic because she's trying really hard and she just keeps getting beaten down and punished.
It feels like a message of society.
I don't know. You're supposed to enjoy it, but like I like her. The ending is a thing I feel like we're going to have to talk about and then sort of circle back around to have this particular topic as to whether or not there's an inherent misogyny to the film, other than the fact that there's an inherent misogyny
to everything, but I'm going to say no.
Okay.
Off the bat.
All right.
Change my mind.
I'm unsure, but I'm glad that you took a bold decision. Mm-hmm. You made a bold choice and we'll see
I can find misogyny in everything, but I've not found it in this particular film.
I'm gonna give a compliment to this movie and then I'm also gonna simultaneously take it away. Are you ready for this shocking revelation?
I'm ready for this back handspring.
I think that the practical effects are incredible and I think that the CGI is garbage.
And you know what? Together, that makes it a Sam Raimi movie to me.
Oh, really?
Like that fits together to me. That feels like Sam Raimi. It just feels right, where it's like just enough good and bad.
I will say this. Don't watch the unrated version because I think they just add more CGI blood and guts, and I think that that makes it less good. I don't need more CGI blood and guts.
Ever liked an unrated version of anything.
I think
unrated,
I agree.
Unrated to me just means like, not edited as well. It's not edited as tightly.
Yeah, I think that Sam Raimi is definitely a guy that the movie that he puts out, and I think he said this about some of the Spider-Man movies because they wanted him to do a quote-unquote director's cut, and he was like, I'll do it, but none of these things are necessary. This is just like, here's a different flavor, but it's not what I intended because what I intended is the thing that was up on the screen. I definitely think that the added squishiness You don't need it. So don't watch the unrated version, I guess is
what
I'm saying.
There's exactly enough squishiness in this movie.
A lot. There sure is a lot.
So much squish.
Yeah. So I think that Mrs. Ganosh, it even like, even her name sounds like a squishiness. Like Ganosh.
Sylvia Ganosh.
Yeah. It just sounds, it sounds like there's stuff coming out of her mouth. And surprise. Yep.
So much stuff. So many mouths.
Yeah, but especially her mouth. Like, she just likes taking her teeth out.
She is the mouth that things go and into. That ruler went in hard.
Oh, yeah. So that's, let's talk about.
Oh, my God.
That is one of the best set pieces, is one of the best sequences of the whole movie. So Christine Brown turns down a extension on this loan repayment. So that Sylvia Ganosh is going to lose her house. She leaves her job. She's going to go get in her car.
She, for no real reason, is carrying her office supplies with her. There is no reason for this.
You know what? Maybe she just watched Office Space and was like, I don't want my stapler to get stolen. No, who knows what
I'm
that guy's going
to
do
all
with
my
stapler. You know what it is? She didn't trust. She didn't trust Kevin or whatever his name is.
This is
a Kevin situation. Oh, that's God. Why. You want to know why she had all her office accoutrement? Kevin. Kevin's the reason.
You know what? In another scene, she pliers a paperclip out of Justin Long's printer. So maybe she's just really careful about office supplies. And you don't get that kind of careful without taking them home and studying every single one.
I'll take your word for it. I assume that you're
a
practice.
I'm just coming up with some reason for her to be carrying a thing of office supplies that isn't just so she can staple a woman.
Courtney, do you never bring your office supplies home with you? I believe that you do.
I do work from home.
See?
And therefore, the answer is yes.
So the answer is yes. I feel like we've really cracked this case. Anyway, so Christine Brown gets in her car. She sees that Sylvia Ganosh's car is also in this garage. This car being also the car that appears in every Sam Raimi movie. Fun fact, if there's a Sam Raimi movie,
awesome.
You will see that car. Every single one, even if he's doing like a Western movie, it'll still somehow find its way into the backdrop. It's there. That's Sylvia's car. So like Christine Brown staring, expecting her to be there.
Phlegm-soaked handkerchief just starts flying across the parking garage. The parking garage, by the way, there is also no need for a parking garage.
None.
Because this location.
It's a local bank branch.
It's a one-story bank that has a parking lot. We see the parking lot in the next scene.
It's, yes, I will say that, like, if we're really picking nits, there's no need for this. I think about it every time. Like,
I'm still fine with everything. I'm just saying there's no need for this parking garage.
So, yes, so we see the hanky. It is moving along the air very gracefully for something that is
American Beauty style, really.
Yeah, and it is surprising because we know that it is just full of every possible human liquid.
It is more fluid than cloth.
Yeah, it is the RoboCop of, but like phlegm cop.
Mm-hmm.
So like we're meant to think like, oh, like something bad is going to happen because of the hanky, which it could. You could catch all kinds of diseases from it. But instead, it kind of floats away, and then we turn around and realize that Sylvia Ganosh is in the back of the car. Somehow, Christine Brown did not notice someone was in the back of her car.
No.
She just really is very clumsy. It's because she was thinking too much about those office supplies.
She was like, is my stapler okay?
Yeah.
Is my ruler fine?
She did, but she didn't know that Sylvia Ganosh was in the car. That was the price she paid for her diligence. She really just constantly pays and pays for being a thoughtful person. Anyway, so then begins a real crazy sequence of two women fighting inside of a car.
Armed with nothing but office supplies.
Yeah. And so...
An old woman being beaten with a stapler. I didn't know that was like a need that I had. In life, but I love it. I love that. I love that she just grabs her stapler and just keeps stapling her.
Yes.
It makes me so happy.
It's great. The stapling is fun. The shoving a ruler into the back of somebody's throat is fun. It's amazing to me and not remotely possible that Mrs. Ganesh, like, coughs that ruler out so hard that it cracks the window when it smacks against it.
I respect that it just cracks the window. Like, a lesser movie would have shattered the window. This movie was just like, no, it's just a crack.
These are the touches that make a Sam Raimi movie a Sam Raimi movie.
Every bit of this is the Sam Raimiest.
So that happens. Eventually, Christine gets Mrs. Ganesh out of the car and gets the doors locked. This is maybe my favorite part of the whole entire sequence, where she's so pleased with herself that she just starts cackling inside of the car. And she's like, I got you, you old bitch. I was like, what is
it? Like, right before that is my favorite part. It's just like such a like a special little detail of the movie that she's like rubbing her face on the window trying to see. And you hear the like the squeak, squeak of like her forehead like rubbing on the window. And it's just
it's so good.
Oh, my
and
God,
then,
I love it.
And then Sylvia Ganesh disappearing from screen, Christine being like, what's going on? And somehow, some way, I guess the janitors really were off their game, because inside of this otherwise very pristine parking garage, there's a giant Brock, almost boulder size. And Sylvia Ganesh ascends with this rock like a T-Rex.
Mm-hmm.
And bashes open the window and then pulls Christine Brown out, takes off a button, which sort of like you think is going to take all of the air out of the scene because it's like such a simple thing, but then breathes her nasty breath onto it, says the name Lamia, and then gives the button back. And hence, now Christine Brown, she in danger, girl.
She is danger. The button, would you say, is like almost the size of a quarter. And just for people who were wondering, there is a scene earlier where, apropos of nothing, I'm sure it doesn't matter. I'm sure it's just one of those scenes. She gives Justin Long a fancy quarter from work.
It's so fancy.
It's so fancy. And
it's like a freshly struck old, yes.
Yeah, which does seem like her the till at work would be down a quarter. Like, she must have replaced it or something. I feel like you can't just steal quarters from banks.
I'm sure it was fine.
I've never worked at a bank. I think of the things I'm going to critique.
Yeah, come on, man.
I've stolen so many pens from so many jobs, though, that I might as well have been stealing quarters.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I've never stolen a pen from anywhere.
I'm still writing with pens I stole from the Merchandise Mart in Chicago.
I can't believe I'm cavorting with you right now.
I'm going to get arrested literally right now.
Oh, gosh. I hope so. Oh, God. All right. Just don't rat me out as a person.
Remember me fondly.
That's it. I will. Maybe. I'll think about it. Anyway. All right. So
this whole podcast has just been about how much we hate each other.
Whoops.
And we actually quite enjoy each other.
It's true. It is true. I don't know why.
We tolerate each other at best.
I'm just really, I don't know. Not every episode of the podcast is with somebody that I feel that I can be a complete piece of shit to. So thanks so much
really,
for being on.
You can just really mock like me.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Yeah.
I'm happy to be that person for you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I'm here for you. I'm here for you, boo.
So anyway, the rest of the movie is basically like things get bad, things get worse. She tries to get rid of the curse. She does not succeed. She tries to get rid of the curse. She does not succeed. She tries to get rid of the curse. She thinks she succeeded.
Okay, you don't see her kill a cat, but there is a cat that gets killed.
This is the thing. She does know. All right, so maybe this is in the unrated scene, but you see her kill the cat and get covered in blood.
Oh, that's unrated then. That was not in, like, the regular, legit theatrical. Like, she literally just walks up and says, like, here, kitty, kitty. And then you see the cat, and then it just, like, it cuts to the exterior of the house, and you hear a meow. You don't see anything.
Okay, so just for the record, in the unrated version, they actually show her kill the cat.
Well,
why?
Dang.
This is terrible. Anyway, yeah. So I guess I can't call you out on that thing I was going to call you out on, because that is pretty cruel. Maybe they should. I'm glad that that is in the unrated edition.
No,
again,
this,
don't watch the unrated
theatrical
version.
The theatrical cut. Yeah, a cat dies, but you don't see it. It's implied. Also, the cat comes back and everything's fine. I mean, the cat's not
the
great.
Cat
the cat's gone
cat
through
is,
some stuff.
The cat is definitely not alive.
The cat's not in a great state, but it does come back. You cannot deny this.
It's true. It does mm-hmm. surprisingly come back like, the very next day, one might even argue.
I don't know the rest of that song. I just know that it is. It is one.
It is one. It was a reference. Mm-hmm. And everybody loves reference humor.
Reference.
Everyone. Got it. So, all right. We can talk about this movie at length. I would like to speak in terms of a particular, and I'm not sure, intentional, kind of not subplot, but like metatextual or subtextual element. Subtextual, let's say that's the right thing. Take it away, Courtney.
Okay, so there is a theory, a longstanding theory that I believe originated on IMDb. And the theory is that this movie is subtextually about an eating disorder, because Christine's character, not only is she trying to cover up her accent and the fact that she grew up on a farm, but she was heavy when she was a child. She was the pork queen, like 94, 95. You go, girl. You did a thing. Great job. But she was heavy. And so there's lots of references to the fact that she wants to eat but doesn't, or that when she does eat, it is somehow shameful. When she goes to Sylvia Ganesh's funeral that she doesn't realize is a funeral, her granddaughter or whatever the relative is says, "You used to be a fat girl." There's just lots of little references to the fact that she used to be heavy and she is now actively trying to not be. And so there are all of these scenes where, like, the Lamia is messing with her, or Sylvia Ganesh is messing with her, and it all involves mouth stuff. Not the fun kind of mouth stuff, but like the shoving rulers into the throat or vomiting huge amounts upon someone. It is all related to just fluids going in and out of mouths. And someone pointed out, too, on another site that I was looking at, that all of the things that you see in Sylvia Ganesh with her messed up nails and her skin are the telltale signs of bulimia, which I did not realize. And I'm not making light of this. I have struggled with bulimia my whole life. So that's, I think, why this theory was so fascinating to me. But it was really interesting to look at it in that lens. I've now watched it multiple times, and I don't know that it is like so clear that that is definitively what it's about, but it's interesting to look at it.
This makes me think about the accusation that this film is somehow misogynist, and I think this is a pretty good argument for why it's not, maybe.
Yeah, I feel like this theory would probably undo some of people's concerns. Like, that if it is about disordered eating in some way or binging and purging, that, like, because otherwise that subplot doesn't really matter. It's just there.
So the flaw in the film, or I guess the perceived flaw from the people who look at it and go, isn't this a little bit misogynist, is because the theory is that we are meant to believe in the end that Christine deserves what happens to her. And what happens to her is she dies and gets dragged to hell. It's the title of the goddamn movie. So I'm not sure why people were surprised.
I think so. I feel like that's, I mean, it's a horror movie. It's a horror movie. It doesn't have that ending scare if she doesn't. But it's also not a movie that you care about your protagonist if you don't side with her in some form.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I do, like, I want her to succeed. I want her to win in the end. But when she doesn't, I'm not, like, I personally do not feel cheated by that.
Yeah, it's purely by accident.
Yeah, because, like, she gets so
close. guys, remember that thing I said about the quarter?
Oh yeah.
So, and that's part of the eating disorder thing is that to try to win, she shoves the what she thinks is the button is the quarter down Sylvia Ganesh's throat.
Right. So she makes three. So just like there are 3 days of the curse, she makes 3 different attempts to get rid of the curse. The first attempt is by sacrificing the cat. The second attempt is that she goes and does a seance with the woman who we meet at the beginning of the film, who tries and fails to save this young boy from the Lamia the first time around.
We haven't even talked about the dancing man. He did a very good dancing man job.
Oh, there is a this. Yes, there is. And that is like speaking of very Sam Raimi-ish.
That is so Sam Raimi. It makes me so happy.
Yeah.
And he calls her a dirty pork queen.
Yes. I'm really shocked it wasn't Ted Raimi. I'm shocked. Yeah. It was a very Ted Raimi performance in particular.
It was so good.
So, all right, yeah. So then she goes and she tries to, the plan is do the seance. The woman who's running the seance will get possessed by the Lamia. Then they will pass that possession into a goat and the goat will be killed. And that does not happen. They succeed up to the goat possession, but then the goat bites this very nice young lad who then becomes possessed and sets some things ablaze and does a fun little dance and then barfs up the cat.
A dance. Oh, it's great.
It is. It's very fun. It's a real blast. Like if ever there was a dance that I was like, I gotta learn how to do that one. It's definitely that one. That's the one that I want to do at parties, including the cat puke. I want to puke up a whole cat. Not every time. So, this is not like an every party thing. It's a special occasion.
Yeah. It's very special occasions.
So she fails in that endeavor, and then the final option is that she can take the button that is cursed and gift it to another, and then that person will be dragged to hell instead of her. And
she tries to do it with Kevin. That's not his name. His name is not Kevin. But she tries to do it with Kevin.
Yeah.
And she decides not to. She feels bad. I would have been fine with it. I would have been fine giving it to Kevin.
Yeah, I would have definitely 100%. I would have been like, take it, Kevin. In fact, I would have broken that thing in half and given him one half to Kevin and then the other half to her boss. That's what I would have done.
And then she would have known, oh, wait, this is not my button. This is a quarter because I can't break it in half. I should probably go look in the car a little bit harder.
Yeah. This whole case would have been cracked if the people that actually had done wrong had paid a price. But the thing is, you know, it's not that kind of movie. And often in life,
because you know what? That's not life. The patriarchy wins. And we as women are dragged to hell.
Wow. This is bleak. you really took us there. I think it is. So I will say this. I think that it is fair to not like that, because that is basically, I do think that is sort of the outcome. It is a very negative ending.
And I don't think that that's misogynistic. I think that that's just, look, maybe it wasn't life in 2009, but it is 100% life in 2018.
Yeah, it is definitely relevant to today by accident, just like when it came out, even though it was written in the 90s. Because it was about people losing their homes because of banks. It was also kind of accidentally.
I mean, it was definitely life then, too. It just wasn't so, like, part of the conversation.
Yeah. All right. I agree with that. But all right. So, yeah, she tries. She just then decides not to. And, yeah, she just, like, there is a point. She eats, like, a whole ass Sunday. That's like her at her tip-top game.
Yeah,
she like eats that whole Sunday, and then she's like another.
It's one of those like full on like serendipity Sundays that's like the size of like a fishbowl drink. It's huge, and you know what? Like, good for her.
What is all right? So, you're about to get dragged to hell, or you're about to make a decision to get somebody else dragged to hell. Either one. Those are your two options. You know, one of them two is going to go down. You're going to have a last meal. What do you eat?
I feel like it's probably going to be Popeyes. Like, I just want, like, a big thing of Popeyes.
All right. I lived in Washington Heights, and, like, Popeyes was one of the three options that I had for food up there. Like, it was Popeyes, really bad Chinese food or really greasy pizza. And I ate all three of them, but I think I ate the Popeyes the most and put on a lot of weight while I lived up there.
Like, I love fried chicken and mashed potatoes and biscuits. Sometimes I need something sweet, but I don't know what my sweet option would be. I don't know if I have a sweet option here in this drag me to hell scenario. But I feel like I'm going fried chicken.
I don't know. I think I would – there's ice cream that has like – it's like ice cream with like fried stuff in
it. Fried chicken bits in it?
Yeah. Like there are not specifically that, but there are like savory ice cream options that are available that are like, so you smoked something.
Yeah, I love a salted caramel ice cream, a salted chocolate ice cream. I get it. A bacon Vosges chocolate. Yeah.
If you're about to be assaulted by a demon – nailed it. I'm sorry.
You did it. You did the thing.
I'm ashamed.
Proud of you.
You shouldn't be. No one should be.
You know what
no.
I'm not going to do? I'm not going to insult you like you have me this entire show.
Well, that makes you a fool. Oh, I mean, that's so nice of you. Anyway, hey. The worst. Let me know when the tears just start to come down your face. Just make sure that everybody
okay,
knows something you're happening.
Keep talking. So
she tries that third time, and then she kind of like comes down on this idea and goes and talks to the guy who reads her fortune, who we didn't really talk about at all, who's a bit of is another bit of a stereotypical situation that is not great. But
he's very good.
He's very talented. Like, the actor's great.
Yeah, he's also just kind of like enjoying his role. Everyone in this movie is on board. Justin Long, we haven't talked about. Justin Long is on board. Justin Long is underrated. Justin Long can get it.
I love Justin Long.
Take it from me. Yeah.
And he loves horror movies. He's a horror movie guy. And yeah, no, he does a great job as like the boyfriend who's skeptical. I think he's very good at it.
So good at it, yeah.
Yeah. So all right. So she's
in this movie.
Yeah.
Hot in this movie.
Agree.
10 out of 10 would Justin.
Wow.
Yeah. Making a hot take.
That was, yeah, I mean, like,
that
I don't
know. That hot long take.
All right, that take was hot and long, and now
it's hot and long.
All right, this bit is going on, it's getting a little too hot and it's going on a little too long. Oh, bless, I appreciate you.
Anyway,
so yeah, so Christine Brown finally like hunkers down on this idea that maybe I can give this button back to Sylvia Ganoche, even though, and we did not mention this, is dead and has been dead.
It did mention she had a funeral.
Yeah, she did a funeral. And then she was all full of dead people fluids that also got all over Sylvia Brown.
So many fluids. This movie is a lot of fluids.
It is fluids the movie.
That is fluid heavy.
So she decides that she's gonna go to the graveyard, she's gonna dig up the lady.
Make a formal gift.
And so she does. And then they do this weird transition where, like, she almost dies. It's like she has a real fight with a corpse, and it's pretty good. A really great – it's kind of a bookend to the fight that she has with Sylvia Ganoche in the car. She now has a fight in the grave. And it's really – it's good. She gets hit in the head with a giant cross.
The rain is filling up that grave hole very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've seen rain. Rain can do that. It can't.
I don't understand science. You're not going to tell me that's inaccurate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rain machine. They should just reveal that it was they'd be like, you know what? They just had a rain machine going. Sylvia Ganoche, it was a Scooby-Doo episode. The whole time, there was no ghost at all. This was all just, like, a clever ruse because they were trying. She was trying to keep her house. And, like, if it wasn't for this pesky girl and her talking dog. Justin
she
Long.
Pulls off her mask. She's been Kevin the whole time.
Oh my God. I want to watch the Scooby-Doo ending of this movie.
Oh. Kevin me to hell.
All right. So that does not happen, although now I really wish that it did.
Sadly.
What a perfect ending to the movie
I know.
We would have had.
Call me Sam.
Yeah, you nailed it. I'm really proud of you. I'm glad that we did this together. All right.
Oh my God, this is the first time you've been nice to me this whole show.
I know. Well, I mean, like, this is how you do it. You nag and you nag.
You have to earn it. You have to earn it.
That's it. Someone should write a book about this. I'm sure they'll be very successful. in life and not be hated at all. Anyway, so yeah, so she thinks that she has succeeded. She goes, she takes a shower. She's feeling great. You know, it turns out that the guy who's not, his name is not Kevin, but we keep calling Kevin, tried to screw her over and the bank over in the process. The boss finds
the promotion
out.
Is hers. And she's thriving.
Yeah, she's getting that job.
She's about to get proposed to.
And now the movie does a metatextual thing, and it's pretty good. Can I ask you, were you surprised by the ending?
I was very surprised. I did not see it coming because I had forgotten about the quarter. I'd forgotten entirely.
I think I knew that that was a possibility. It was in the mix for me. But okay,
oh,
so there's...
good for you. Cool. You're smart. I didn't. Okay. I did not even consider it.
I was surprised. I was surprised because I, you know, like you really like, you root for her. You like, I think that Christina is a very likable mm-hmm. character. I think Alison Lohman does such a good job of making her really likable. And, you know, she like, there is literally a moment where like when she decides she's going to go get Sylvia Ganesh, she is in her car and she goes, I'm going to get some. And you're like, oh, okay. So she is the Bruce Campbell character. She's the Ash.
Yeah.
So you assume at that point, it, you know, like Ash survives. He always survives. So you assume that she'll survive, which kind of brings me to the other reason why I'm surprised that at the end she goes, she gets a nice new coat. Justin Long's like, oh, where's that old coat? And she's like, oh, I got rid of it. And he's like, that's a shame because like, here's this button. And then she falls under the tracks and
like,
there's
no!
a train is coming and you're like, oh my God, is the train going to get her? But no, like all these hands come up from the ground and drag her to hell. The reason why I am so surprised by that is because of where they're going. They make a big deal about this. He's like, oh, we're going to go. My parents have this really nice cabin in the woods. And I was like, oh, they're going to the Evil Dead cabin.
Oh, I get it. I became like a Santa Barbara Spanish
for they make such a big deal about
hell.
It. They keep bringing up this idea that there's a cabin in the woods. And I'm like, this is a Sam Raimi movie.
It's so you know that it's special because he's going to propose.
Yeah, I thought for sure that like, yeah, like they were going to get on the train and they were going to go into a cabin and there was going to be like, I don't know why. It's stupid now that I think about it.
No, that would have been amazing. But as a lady person, it's like, oh, special trip. Yeah, he's going to propose.
Yeah. I just had it in my head that like this was somehow going to connect. And I was like, cool, I'm so down for this. Because, you know, like in my nerd brain, I just...
Yeah. Hear that, gentlemen nerds listening? You might be making some nerd brain stuff, but if you take a lady on a trip, she's probably going to think you're going to propose.
Okay.
And she's going to get dragged
thinking,
to hell.
Yeah. So she gets dragged to hell. But you like that. You like the ending.
I love it. I love me a bad ending. Like where like just stuff goes wrong. And people get, like, dragged to hell or everyone dies. There's just, like, no survivors. I love it. Because it's, like, it's not the norm. Like, Cabin in the Woods, the actual apocalypse comes. Love it. Sold.
Yeah, I just did a podcast talking about a movie called Oculus, in which...
Also, I liked
does
that
not,
movie.
Yeah.
I liked that movie. And
I like a bummer ending in a horror movie,
everyone
I think.
Everyone dies and goes to prison. It's great.
Yeah, it's real good. When that happened, again, to bring it back to the very beginning of this podcast, I was basically alone in a theater, laughing maniacally like mm-hmm. a crazy person. And I, to this day, continue to just love that ending. I don't, like,
I love
once it.
It
happens, I'm like, there's no other way this movie could have possibly ended.
No, it needed that. And that's the thing. Like, there's no... Maybe it's my horror misogyny blind spot, but when it comes to an ending where, like, someone's going to, like, have the shock death, I'm always going to be fine with it. I'm always going to be fine with it.
Yeah, I liked it, and I liked, yeah, and Justin Long just gives such a great take, like, that look mm-hmm. on his face. Like,
oh, yeah.
I just get that, like, I get, like, goose flesh as she gets pulled down, and they do a pretty good
scared.
Job.
That's, he's great. He's hot. Everything's going great for Justin Long. This is the Justin Long fan club, and it's me. Hi.
yeah, look, here's what happens. So, like, that happens. It's a real bummer. Like, Christine Brown dies, gets dragged to hell, and, like, Justin Long is, like, so, like, he's crying, he's horrified, he's a wreck. And then, like, 5 seconds later, Courtney Anlow just kind of, like, walks into the scene. It's like...
Yeah, and it's like, oh, hey, do you like my coat? Cool.
Yeah, and then he goes off and is like, oh, Christine yeah. who? Because Courtney's there. That's actually yeah, goes, that's he, actually the extended ending.
He goes
ending.
Into Zach and Mary. That's the next step. He joins the sex work crew, starts acting in porn, Zach and Mary sequel.
Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm into it. I'm glad that
a
I'm
lot of
that
people don't know about that, but it's true.
But and also that you're in both of these movies. Nobody.
I'm
knew.
In both of these movies.
They,
yeah.
They cut you out. It's a travesty. Why would they do that? It's,
I mean, it hurt, but I get it.
Yep. I'm just laughing at your pain over here. No big deal.
Why are you like this?
I don't know. It's terrible.
I could go along with it and make you seem lovable,
why would you do that? I mean, like, obviously, I've intentionally been digging all the way through to the Earth's core. I was actually dragging myself to hell. It was a metaphor the whole time. Mm-hmm. And now
Earth's
we...
Earth's court. That's me. I'm the Earth's court.
Oh, nice. I didn't even...
Hey,
yeah.
Thanks.
Wow, we really
I know.
Did it.
I have those loaded all the time.
And Finn. Okay. Before we end this podcast, I like to, if you've got one in the tank, if you like Drag Me to Hell, what's another movie that you should maybe watch? Like, if you were going to do a double feature.
Any other Sam Raimi movie would pair well. Like, if we're talking about, like, horror movie wine kind of pairings. I don't know. You've done a number on me.
I mean, that's what I do.
You know what, though? Like, I love a good... A horror movie that you can also laugh at. So my heart is going to just say Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Unexpected.
Unexpected, but like in that same way, like constantly delightful.
I mean, I do love that second movie. It
in a deeply gayer way, but like in a delightful way where you're just on board with everything. And a lot of mouth stuff. So much mouth stuff.
Oh, okay. So that's the connection.
Mm-hmm. That's the connection.
It's the mouth stuff connect.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. All right. So mine is a little more on the nose. So there is a movie that Drag Me to Hell is influenced by.
This
some
is
might...
cheating and you know it.
Yeah, but like that. But in that way, Drag Me to Hell also cheated in that it kind of ripped
you're
off this other movie.
You're a monster and you're
movie.
A bad person.
Wow. I mean, mm-hmm. Are you talking to me or Sam Raimi right now?
I'm literally talking to you. You are a bad person
okay.
and a monster.
I mean, just remember that Sam and I are both of Hungarian descent. So in a way, you're speaking to
I'm
both
of us.
I'm
not being racist. I'm not
no,
being racist
I didn't
racist
say you're being
right
racist.
Now.
I said, just said you were talking to both of us. I'm not talking to you.
You not, specifically.
Well, all right. Fine. I accept that. But be that as it may, I believe that the movie to pair with Drag Me to Hell is a movie that is called either Night of the Demon or Curse of the Demon. It's a 1957 British movie. It is ostensibly about a man who is a skeptical science type who is going to reveal the truth about a satanic cult leader and runs afoul of a curse. There are a lot of similarities between these two movies. You can definitely see that Sam Raimi watched this movie and was like, hmm. Or potentially that Ivan Raimi watched the movie and went, hmm. Or maybe they both did.
Someone somewhere went,
yeah, they made that exact noise, and mm-hmm. hopefully no one else is around because, gosh, it's a really irritating sound.
Did you move your shoulders when you did it? Because I did.
I did. Yes, same. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, you kind of pull your shoulders yeah. in a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that I would recommend that movie. It also has some pretty dodgy special effects. If you can get it, I think it's available on DVD if you want to get both cuts, because Night of the Demon is basically just the original UK cut, which is like 10 or 15 minutes longer. If you don't care about that, if you're willing to watch the tighter, shorter film, Curse of the Demon is available for like $4 or $5 on YouTube. It's good. I have to say, I don't want to spoil anything else about it, but not all movies from the 1950s are great, let's be real. And especially horror movies, I think that like bad special effects from that time can sometimes pull you out in some cases. And this is really like, I had not seen it before I was doing added research for this podcast. And this has like been one of the things that made like this entire endeavor of talking about a horror movie every single day in October worth it, was that I found this movie. I liked it so much. So highly recommend if you're watching Drag Me to Hell or even liked it and are just looking for something else. Night/Curse of the Demon is the way to go, in my opinion. And that's our show. You made it to the end. Courtney, are you okay?
I mean, I have a lot of issues that I'd like to talk about, but...
Nope, that's... I'm sorry. That's a completely different podcast. Nope. Yep. You gotta suck it in. We got to get to the end of this podcast, and then you can be it however you want to be.
Everything's fine.
Great. Okay. Thank you, person who's listening to this podcast right now. If you're not subscribed, please subscribe to the podcast. And while you're at it, give a review and listen to all of these other wonderful Sci-Fi Wire podcasts like The Phantom Files and Strong Female Characters. The official Wynonna Earp podcast, I believe, will be still going out around the time that this actually starts to air. And yeah, there's a bunch of stuff on Amazon. Hey, Courtney.
Hey, Danny.
Thanks for doing this podcast with me.
Thank you for having me.
Would you please tell people at home where they can find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter @CourtEnlow, and you can listen to Trends Like These wherever you download your podcast. It's also at MaximumFun.org. And I might be back on this one if I feel like it.
Okay. I mean, I believe that after this podcast is over, we'll sort it out. Maybe we'll go to a therapy sesh. But I think that Courtney will probably be back.
We might speak again. We might speak again.
Okay, I hope so. Anyway, you can find me, Danny Roth. My content is pretty much all on sci-fi.com, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram @DannyOrdinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. Thank you. That is our show. And remember, kids, sometimes the best way to deal with the horrors of every day is with a little everyday horror.